committed to exposing exploitation and helping workers who are mistreated, abused, underpaid and facing injustice in their workplace.
Presented by Utu for Workers Union, we're your hosts, Matt McCartan and Izzy Kane.
Kia ora, welcome to the first ever Utu for Workers Hour on 104.6 Planet FM. Thanks for tuning in. I'm one of your hosts, Izzy Kane, and we have a pretty packed show for you today. Lots of guests on and honestly outrageous stories about the worker exploitation happening in New Zealand. But to start with, our listeners are probably wondering, who on earth are these people? So for a quick introduction, I'm Izzy Kane. I've been a part of the Utu for Workers Union project for the last year and a half or so. And I work alongside Matt McCartan here, a man who needs very little introduction, but even so, would you like to introduce yourself, Matt?
Yes, hi, Izzy. I'm Matt McCartan, and nice to be here. I'm the director of the union, and you and I will be here every Wednesday to talk about the good work that our union's been doing on behalf of workers.
Because we've been operating under the radar, in a way, for the last while. But as of May 1st, official International Workers' Day, we've relaunched as the Utu for Workers Union.
Yep.
And this is our weekly show.
That's right.
So first, when it comes to wondering what Utu for Workers is, I thought we'd do a sort of a Q&A with myself and Matt, so Matt could explain to our listeners what our kaupapa is, why we're here, and what we plan to do. So I'm going to start, jump right in. So, Matt, what is Utu?
Well, Utu, and there's a deliberate reason we've called our project the Utu for Workers Union, and for those who don't know, that a union's a trade union. It represents employment issues for workers, so that's the organisation. But the Utu name is it comes from the Māori term, which loosely it's justice. And that Utu is the process of getting justice for someone who has had their mana diminished.
So it's more complex than the traditionally understood meaning of revenge.
Yeah, that's a kind of, and I think we've been at this ball, there was a film in the 70s called Utu, and that was about revenge, and so in folklore that becomes its main. That Utu comes in two ways, and that's one of them. One of them is, and we say to employers who have mistreated their workers, the Utu is a process, and there's two pathways. One is you admit it, you apologise and you make amends. That's the first process of Utu. The second process is, if they refuse to do that, then we're in a position of conflict. And that's when, in the Māori terms, where hostilities would break out. So it's a double meaning, and both of them are true. And that's why we picked the name Utu for Workers. We also refer to it in terms of the legal sense, United Trade Unionists for Workers Union. So it's both of those things.
So we incorporate multiple strands in the meaning of
the word. But I think it is the Utu in the terms of the Kiwi way that we interpret it. That's right.
Okay, so what makes Utu for Workers a unique union?
It's unique because it's more than just a union. You know, it's a movement for justice.
Right.
That what we have is in this country is the majority, overwhelming majority of workers in the private sector particularly, over 90% do not belong to a union. Over 60% of workers in this country can't even join a union. There's no union. So when they have problems with employment issues or they want to improve their conditions, there's no mechanism. So if you get the sack or you're exploited, and we do a lot of exploitation cases and abuse and bullying and unfair and underpayments and non-payments, etc., is there's only a lawyer. Or you can go to an advocate or a lawyer, or you go to the government departments, the labour inspectors, and they are bureaucracy and they take forever. The lawyers will only take your case if they think it's easy and if they think they can get some money from it and make it easy.
So this doesn't sound like justice.
Most workers have no chance, none, zero, none, doesn't happen. So what's happened is that, you know, what we're finding, and you know, you and I have been working together now, the abuse. Abuse and exploitation has exploded in this country. Exploded. It is rife. So we're on a mission to put this right. And what we're going to do is we have the Utu for Workers Union, which is really the catalyst of organising and confronting abuses of workers. So if any worker wants any help, we won't turn them away. We won't make us different. So they can phone our 0800 368 000, or go to our website, utu.org.nz, utu.org.nz, and, you know, and write to us. And if we can help you, we will. And that's the difference with us and anyone else. Every other union, they say, look, if you're not a member, we can't help you.
Mm. And we do have membership.
We started membership as from May the 1st. So we are saying, look, we want people to join us now. We will help people. But what we have to do now, we've established the way we want to operate. We want people to join the movement because it's not just about yourself. It's about helping others. So we will help everyone who needs help. We'll help them. But then they become part of the union and our family to help other people as well. So, you know, we are very excited about the project and, you know, we want to tell the world about what we do and our mission and how we're going to help.
Yeah, and crucially, this also applies to dependent contractors and migrants. You know, this is where it gets hard because, as I understand it, unions were set up to help employees. But, you know, the status of a lot of workers has changed. You know, many people listening to this might be what are called dependent contractors, you know, a term that's used for workers who are for all intents and purposes an employee, but they have no protections. You know, it might include subcontractors, courier drivers, cleaners, etc., etc. You know, they don't come under other existing union umbrellas. But at UTU for Workers, we'll help these people. We take the view that anyone who gets paid by someone else for labour is a worker and has the right to be protected. So on that, I think it's about time we dive into talking about the cases of exploitation that we're dealing with. And we'll discuss more later about how a direct action approach is crucial to getting justice for these workers, but rather than just talk about it, I think it's time we give you an example. So Matt's now going to interview some case advocates and welcome our first guest, Sabrina, onto the show.
Thanks very much for coming in, and I wanted you to come and speak to our listeners about this case that you're doing, and it's one of the more serious cases I've come across, and I've come across some serious ones, but this was one of the few I've come across where there's been some, if not physical intimidation, this was menace, that if this worker didn't drop the case that you are representing him on, that they would have him deported, and I think that is a story that you need to tell. So for the listeners, just tell us who you are.
Well, kia ora, Matt. Thank you for having me. I'm Sabrina, and I've been working for the advocacy team for One Union. And, I've been working on this case of a worker who came here on a sponsored visa to New Zealand and pretty much suffered pretty bad, horrible exploitation where he was underpaid, made to work extreme hours, and threatened.
Yeah, so that's it. So this was look. We should name names because I don't want to piss about. So this is a restaurant in Wellington called Tulsi Restaurant.
Quite a popular.
Tulsi. Oh, is it?
Quite a popular restaurant.
Well,
we
might be visiting them soon. I assure you. So it's Tulsi. Is
yes,
that right?
That's correct.
Restaurant. And that's in Wellington. What suburb are they in? Do you know?
All over on Cuba Street.
Oh, there you are. So we'll be visiting, all right. So that's the cafe. So this worker was actually bought in by the employer as a chef of some sort through immigration and was given it 4 years ago. And you were saying that he was been working 60, 70 hours? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And getting paid for what? And what was he getting paid?
Well, in the first 2 to 3 months, not getting paid at all, it seems.
Hold on. Not at all. For free.
That's what it looks like to us.
How does... Because I'm... I'm containing myself. So how does someone... How does an Immigration New Zealand allow an employer to bring someone overseas and work them as essentially a slave for 3 months... without any checks by the bureaucracy?
Well,
how does that work?
It appears the oversight just doesn't exist.
Head's going to roll over this home. I'm on a mission. Okay, so what we've got is we've got someone who's enslaved in our country, right? Come here to build a new life and a new thing. The state goes, welcome, and here's your job, and you get paid nothing. So he worked for free for the first 3 months.
2 to 3, yes.
Two to 3 months. Then after that, he was getting paid?
Yes, but unfortunately he was only getting paid for approximately 22 hours when he was working upwards of 70 hours a week.
Let me just take a deep breath here. All right, so he wasn't getting paid for 3 months or 2 or 3 months. He's working for free, but the boss was magnanimous. He only had to work for 40 hours a week. And then after that, he started paying him for 22 hours and was working him up to 70 hours, which is still working the 40 hours for nothing, isn't it? That's what it works out if you do the sum of maths. It's 30 hours plus 22, that's 62. So this young man has been working 40 hours for free for the boss pretty much for 4 years?
Yep,
pretty
4 years.
Bloody
pretty hell. Much exactly.
All right, so that's 40 hours unpaid work, so at the minimum wage, that's $800 a week. $800 by 52, I'm just doing maths, that's 40 grand a year. Times 4 years, about 160 grand or somewhere. But it's big money, right? Big money. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So what happened? Tell us is what else, because I understand that he was also, you were telling me that he's offline before he came on, that he was required to pay the boss some money too.
Yes.
To keep the job.
So it's quite common practice, unfortunately, but cashbacks seems to be quite a common practice
in the industry. It's called job premiums, eh?
Yes.
Yeah. So how much was this young man, was the young man being paid the money through the books and the tax department? So that I can see now is how they're getting away with it, and tell me if I'm wrong. So what they would have been filing the amount to the tax department or what the contract says for 40 hours a week, and then the worker was then paying money back. Was that how it was working?
Yes.
Each week. So that's how it's working. So he might have been paid for his 40 hours a week. Then the tax has been paid on it so that the IRD, if they ever inspected it, show anything. And then the young man was then having to pay cash back to the boss each week to make the difference up.
Yes, and the cashbacks ranged from $5,000 to $7,000.
Oh, this was in lump sums?
Yeah, it was done in lump sums.
Okay. So how much did he in the 4 years pay the boss in cash?
Approximately $20,000, I'd say.
$20,000 on top of being exploited and working for 40 hours for nothing. Let me just take a breath. Okay, all right. So this young man, you know, was promised a visa and to get permanent resident, all right, because that's the promise that was held out to them, right? When he realised that was going to work, he confronted his employer and said, look, I've got to get paid my money or some of it at mm-hmm. least, you know? And what happened then?
There were some conversations, and it seems that a lot of the time when these kind of conversations were brought up, the employer, Tulsi, told the employee that this was the way to get permanent residency.
Right.
And this was during the exploitation. And after the fact, goons have been sent to the employee's house.
I want to talk about that in a minute. So he had a meeting. So the boss's name, the owner's name is Monty Patel. Right? So we're going to put all the details on our website, right, so people can see it. And it's at utu.org.nz, you know, utu.org.nz. We'll put his details up there. So, you know, he's not going to get away with this. So then he had some private conversations with him and promised him a certain amount of money, right? If you drop the case or you know, go away. And there's been various money which has been offered. And the latest was how much?
Well, the worker has told us that he was offered $42,000.
Okay, so this boss knows that there's serious money. No one goes and offer a worker for $42,000 cash, you know. And that tells me is that, you know, he's as guilty as sin. But the worker then leaves town, you know, and goes to, I won't say the town because I don't want to identify him, but so he moves to town quite away from Wellington, right? Mm-hmm. So then tell us, because you just alluded to it, right? So this guy was threatened, or the young worker was threatened. So tell us how that happened.
Well, the worker had been in contact with a friend from Wellington mm-hmm. who he gave the address to.
Right.
And then the friend turned up with a relation of Monty Patel.
Right. So he's the thug. Oh, you can't say that, BB, because you're the advocate. I'll say it. This was the muscle. So they turned up on his doorstep in this other town. In the morning, as I understand, they turned up, and then essentially, as I understand it, that the muscle man, the hood, the thug, the enforcer, then said to him, "Drop the case, or we'll have you deported." So that's menace, isn't it?
Very menacing.
Right. So from a legal point of view, and you know the law well, that's a criminal act.
Harassment.
It's menace. And so this is about putting fear. And we hear about this sort of carry on, but this is just something we've got. So this is the world that we are inflicting upon those people who come to this country by the rules to try and build a better life. It's not the Kiwi way. And I'm so glad that you are doing this work because, we should be grateful to you, Sabrina, and the rest of your team. So tell us now the next steps are. So the boss is, of course, denying it all and said he only worked for 22 hours or whatever it was a week. But you've got some records.
Four years of it.
4 years. And what's this information?
GPS tracking data.
Oh.
And let me tell you, we haven't even had the chance to trawl through it all, and what we have so far is not looking good.
For the boss.
For the boss.
Looking good for the worker. So just for our listeners, right, I'm smiling here because, there's one good thing that Google does. It's got a tracking device. This is the only time I'll thank them ever. But, of course, that shows where the young man he was is with his cell phone, which is at work. So it shows him on the boss's premises in the hours in which he said he was working there. The boss has produced timesheets, which says he was only working for 22 hours a week. But, in fact, what the tracking device shows that he was working, all the hours of which he claims. So that will be presented, and that's, from a legal point of view, that's pretty strong, right? That's open and shut.
I would think so.
Yes, of course. You've got to say you think, I know. So this guy, because he knows, he offered him $442,000, but you've got some texts and emails and other sorts of stuff, haven't you, as well, which backs up.
We have contracts for the cashbacks, bank transfers.
Beautiful. I love it. Love it. Justice is coming. So this guy, I suspect he's doing it to others too, but he needs to be investigated. But we've got to concentrate on this young worker who you represent and give him justice. So that's thing. So, all right. So this is going to be a case that you're going to keep us updated on, because I think it's important. And look, people who are listening to this, and if you're outraged as I am, it's not about being upset. It's not about us. It's about what we're going to do about young people who put in this position and what we're going to do to help them. So look, people, go to our website. Let us know, not only if what you know about this guy, this Monty Patel, the owner of Tulsi, and he had him working in a warehouse as well, right?
That's
the extra hours, and in the phone records they show that. So it's pretty clear he's working for 60 or 70 hours a week, as is normal for some of these young workers. So we want to get to the bottom of that, but we want people who are listening to us to, if they know of anybody who's in this position, they let us know. Go to our website. We've got a little thing where you can email us. It's confidential. We're trying to sort this out. We're not trying to get anyone into trouble. But also, we'll put this Monty Patel's, the details up, and people can tell us more about this guy, because there's always a pattern. This is not a one-off. I can smell it, and so can anyone who's listening to this. So thank you, Sabrina, for coming. We want to hear more of you. We want you on each week and tell us all these other cases you're doing. But, you're doing great work, and we really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Wow. That's the first time I've heard the story behind that case, and I have to say I'm appalled, honestly. Sending goons to a worker's house who you've shamelessly exploited and then threatening deportation? It's absolutely disgusting. And on that, it's crucial to note how migrant workers are some of the most, if not the most, vulnerable workers in Aotearoa New Zealand. And our partnership with the Migrant Workers Association has been of extreme value in that respect. For our listeners, Matt, can you explain the relationship between Utu for Workers and the Migrant Workers Association?
The Migrant Workers Association and the project you and I have been working on now, we've had the relationship all the way through.
Yeah.
The migrant workers, there's 350,000 workers in this country who are migrant workers on temporary visas. Huge. And in too many instances, I'm afraid to say, is they are vulnerable to exploitation and extortion, which is happening. So a lot of our work is involved with that, with working with the Migrant Workers Association, who lead that work up. And so what's important to focus in on is that the way we treat the most vulnerable people in our society affects us all. So the migrant workers is 350,000 in this country who are on what they call temporary visas, which means is they're vulnerable because they need a sponsor, an employer to sponsor them. And this is where a lot of unfortunate corruption and extortion and abuse comes in. So the migrant workers just do extraordinarily good work there and helping that. But what we do is the legal work and any campaign work, we work with them about that. So that's our partnership. Because even if you're not a migrant worker yourself, you know how others are treated in our society is our responsibility.
An injury to one is an injury to all.
The old trade union, you're absolutely right. And so we take that seriously. So, but also, if exploiters are able to get away with this, then it drives the wages down and conditions for all workers. And so that's why we think it's so critical is that we put a lot of work in that area to stop the mass exploitation. But we also do a lot of our work for just the normal abuses and just sometimes, you know, unfair dismissals.
So that offers a good segue into our next case interview, where Matt is going to speak to the head of advocacy services at the One Union Trust about what I believe is a case of false redundancy over the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic period. So take it away, Matt and Bryce.
Well, our next guest, and will be a regular guest, Bryce Hamilton, who is the head of the advocacy team for the One Union Trust. And the trust works in partnership with the union, the UTU for Workers Union. And Bryce's team, they do the legal work for workers who bring cases. And the union runs campaigns, and the union is sponsors of this program. So our mission is to get the stories out and get people to actually see what is going on and understand what is going on. So, Bryce, thanks very much for coming in. The case that we want to talk about, right, is something I know that's been going on, and you'll tell us how long it's been going on. It seems like it's been going on for ever. But this is about most of the cases we do, or many of the cases we do are more about exploitation of migrant workers who are at the bottom of the food chain, so to speak, and also young people and vulnerable workers who get bullied and harassed at work and not paid, etc., etc. This one is from a family business, well-established business, is where workers who talk back or ask for their rights with their employer, then two of them were made redundant, and when I use the word redundant, they were sacked, and that you have taken their case up and you've been trying to resolve this now for a long time. So could you just tell us why this has gone on so long and what essentially it's about?
The company is known to people as Dollar Dealers.
They've got five dealers. Stores
in Auckland.
Okay, so how many stores have they got?
Five stores.
Five stores. And who's the guy? Like, who's the boss who did this?
So the director, the head of this place, is a guy called James Delmont.
So he's the son of the family that owns it, right? And so he's the boss, operations boss. And he's the guy who's made all the decisions here.
That's right.
Right, so that's who we're talking about. So we're going to put his details on our website, utu.org.nz, utu.org.nz, because I think it's important when we tell our story that we name him, because he's the guy who's done this. Okay.
So the two workers getting the COVID subsidy, the first round of COVID-19 subsidy, wage subsidy, and they ask a few questions. And as soon as they ask a few questions, just before the second round, they go through a short, sharp redundancy
process. Okay, but just go back a bit before that. So this is when the COVID came in, the state gave all the bosses $580 a week for full-time workers to give to the workers to keep them employed, right? Or at least they can pay their rent. The employers, so this employer went to the workers and said, yep, we've got your money to pay you through this period, but you've got to take holiday leave and you've got to take other. So what these two workers said, well, hold on, there has to be a consultation on this. You can't just tell us.
That's right. You can't do things unilaterally.
Yeah, so that's the key factor.
Yeah.
Then straight after that, they went into a redundancy process just for those two workers.
Just for the ones that asked the questions.
The two clients, which that's you're right. representing now. So there was no redundancy. That was a nonsense. So if there's a redundancy, you're doing the whole workforce. This wasn't.
There's one easy way to tell. The jobs were advertised shortly after they were made redundant.
Right. So in the month that they were made redundant, they actually were were their jobs were advertised. So that's an open and shut case of dismissal, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the law's pretty clear. They weren't superfluous to the needs of the employer because the employer had to hire two more people again after
exactly. So the employer replaced them by advertising for the job. So that's open and shut in my view. But what I found particularly disturbing or outrageous about this is that the bosses had said initially that they would get the COVID money, right? Because that's what it's for, right? But when they found out the loophole in their first round, they then didn't pay any of that money to the workers. The workers got basically a few days and they walked off. They were told about Thursday off, Wednesday or Thursday, and out on Friday, and they were escorted out, and they got paid nothing.
A very short period of time.
So they got walked off the site. And so you got involved and put it to them, and their HR, I didn't even know they had an HR, but anyway, the HR, you know, paid liar, she then pretends that they've had a redundancy process and all that, and you found out it's all nonsense, right?
Well, their own information provides that it was nonsense, yeah.
I know, because they're not only crooks, they're stupid. And so you picked up on their lies and you found them out. So they stole the money, the taxpayers' money, which was supposed to go to those workers, gave the workers nothing. They then gone down the road. You've been representing them. And so what have the bosses been saying? Because this is a pretty open-and-shut case, right?
Well,
you know? And they go, you know what, Bryce, you got us. Okay, look, we'll pay the money.
Didn't go down like that at all, man.
So why not?
Sorry to let you down on that.
Why not?
How long
has it been?
How this went down is I went through and reached out to them, which you're required to do as an advocate. And then what happened was I was basically told in a very short, sharp manner to go away. After that, I put the statement of problem to the authority and did all the things that we need to do. And I did say to James on the phone that I'm available on a without prejudice basis at any time, but you'd be surprised. There's been no phone call.
Yeah, he's telling you lies. But what it is... the question I want to get to, right, well, I want you to answer for our listeners, right? So how long has it been, the time?
Somewhere between 12 and 18 months.
Okay, so 18 months or so since it first was raised.
Yeah, that's right.
And have you... Because I can't believe that they could look you in the eye and say this was legitimate. Mm-hmm. So what's happened at the meetings that you've had with them?
Well, fundamentally, there have been no meetings.
Well, fundamentally, it means you've either had a meeting or not.
Yeah, well, no.
There's been no meeting.
And the reason for that is because the employers are allowed to use the system in that way.
Yeah. Now, look, so they've not fronted.
No.
In 18 months, they've not fronted.
No.
So the system allows a boss to play games and not have to turn up. So you've filed.
That's right.
You filed for a mediation.
Yep.
They accept the dates and didn't turn up. Or cancelled at the last moment, and the mediation has also cancelled because it's inconvenient for them too at certain times, right?
And only just now, just in the last little bit, has the authority decided, oh, we're going to direct you to mediation.
No, that's fine. So now the authority is directed to mediation, but after 18 months.
Yeah.
So my point is, when people talk about, oh, the system, yeah, and we've got to get... What a nonsense. Mm. This was an open and shut case.
Yeah.
It was never a redundancy. The money was there. They stole the workers' money. Mm. There was a dismissal because they advertised the jobs the next month. It's open and shut. Yet, and they know that, so they use their smarty pant lawyers, right, to delay, and hoping that you'll go away. But I know you. You're a cherry. You'll just keep holding on. Yeah. No, good on you. So 18 months. Get to go to mediation, but that's just them will delay it again, right? Because they're not required to make any agreement or settle this matter. That's right, isn't it?
Well, there is the lawful requirement to reduce the need for judicial intervention, but that's not what they said to us. What they said to us is they want to go all the way, so that's fine. I don't mind. That just means it's going to be more painful when it gets into the authority.
You're far too polite for them. You're gentle. You're a nice person. Okay. Now, what we need to do this, right? I'm sick of this. You know, I'm sure you are, but you're being polite. And you have to because you're representing these workers through the system. I want to talk to the people who are listening to this directly. This goes on all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, where businesses get away with the stuff, right? A worker asks for their rights, they get the sack and pretend it's a redundancy. This is particularly egregious because they stole the money from the taxpayer and put it in their pocket. What an hour. What a greedy. This is rich people. You know, this family makes money off poor people by their pawnbroking. So let's just get the types of people they are. I can say that. Now, we're going to have to pick at this guy. Right, that's what he focused. We're going to have to think. So go to our website because we're going to put his name up, and I'm going to put him up. I'm sick of this guy, and you know you've got to do your job. But people listening to this got to do our job too in the community, right? This is a business that exploits its workers and then thinks it can get away with it, and they can't get away with it. So look, we have an Utu squad, we call it. You know, you can go to our website under our volunteer post, and people say, you know, Matt, we'll put a hand up. We'll come and help because this is the way we're going to resolve it. And now you've got to do it the best you can. But in the end, you know, these guys just keep appealing and appealing. It's 18 months now. They go for another year or two if they can get away with it, right? So we've got to actually just bring some focus. This is a business that's ripping its employees off. So anyway, that's it. So if you know of anyone else you know has been made redundant and isn't a redundancy, you know, again, just email us because our mission is that we help any worker who's in trouble. If it's something which the union can resolve, we will. But Bryce and his team, the advocacy team and one union, that they will do the work for workers who can't afford a lawyer and want some justice, and we want to get justice too. So just to wrap up, Bryce, thanks very much for coming in, doing the work you do. Please keep us up to date with this case, and we'll have you on each week about other cases were similar, because I think that all of us, we need to hear this and what we're doing about this. And congratulations to your team, and our thanks to you. Is there anything you need to tell our listeners before we close off?
Yeah,
about this case?
Kia ora, people, and thank you, Matt. I think the biggest thing is that if you're in a similar situation, feel free to give us a call at One Union.
Right, and people, you can get hold of Bryce directly. Just email, and Bryce gets all the anyone who needs help. We have a little button on our page, and it goes straight through to Bryce, and Bryce and his team will assess the case and how they can help you.
Okay, thanks again, Bryce. I'm starting to suspect that the only commentary I can give on this show is bleak after listening to the details of that case. But no, these stories need to be heard, and we need to fight back. And you know, as Matt said, we can pick at these bosses because we can hold people like this James Delmont to account. And in this case, the course of action is direct action. So that leads me into my final question for Matt about how Utu for Workers operates. Specifically, Matt, how does direct action work, and how is it key to our mission?
Well, critical.
Yeah.
So what the union and the Utu union particularly is around campaigning and confronting these abuses directly as well. So we have a thing, what we call the Utu squad, and Utu, as we said, is for justice. And so we will confront exploiters or serious exploiters and extorters and bullies and thieves, and we will hold what we call vigils outside their homes or their businesses, and we will name them. And this is part of this show that we will name. We've got cases are coming up today. We name these criminals, I call them, and we'll name them, and we will campaign against them because that's the way it's going to stop. So we will focus on our campaign work, and we will publicise, and we will tell the rest of New Zealand what these people are doing. If we do that job well, then the culture will change in this country. So that's our mission.
As we've been proving on the show so far, another point springs to mind regarding the appeal of the Utu for Workers Union in our approach. I mean, you know, a lot of young people, including myself, when I first got involved in this project, honestly, is the reputations unions actually have now, dare I say, irrelevant, tends to come to mind. So how are we avoiding falling into that perception of how the general populace tends to see the union movement?
Well, first of all, I think the acknowledge is you're right, is that the unions as institutions really were organisations from another era. What this is about, but justice is what it's about. And what we have to do is actually say that young people, all people, are interested in justice. So this is more of a movement. We're registered as a union, but we have the Migrant Workers Association, and we have a trust which does the legal work. So this is a partnership focused on outcomes. So it's not a union or like a club. This is a movement of justice.
Well, it's a campaign. It's a grassroots movement, and it's something we are doing online. We're using the airwaves. We're using social media, and that's something, you know, younger generations are immersed in.
And that's a good combo for our show, Izzy, that you come from a generation where this, where we live in the world we live in today. What I hope to bring is the experience we have of how we can help workers in the practical way, and those are victims of crimes in practical ways, that what you have a very clear idea is how to engage people.
How to bridge that gap and encourage the communities to step forward. All levels of our community need to step forward in New Zealand about this issue. And we're all affected by it.
Izzy, that is where you and I are in complete agreement, and we're doing the show.
Fantastic. Well, this takes us to our third and final interview for the show today, this time with the wonderful Aman, about a case we suspect is part of a much wider racket.
Well, Aman, thanks very much for coming in. And you're advocating for a case I think is very important for listeners to hear, because I think it's part of a wider issue. So this is, I understand, what you've told, you've briefed us or briefed me about, is that it seems like students have been approached from overseas to be offered jobs, and the jobs don't really exist, but they are told to pay money and that they work for free. So tell us how this has come about.
So we'll call this particular person Lucy.
And we call, so you pick Lucy because these workers are too scared to use their real names. So this is a worker who's come to you, and you're representing her to get her money back.
Yes, that's right.
So, all right.
So she was a student at AUT, and she was approached by someone who offered her a job, and she had to pay $12,000 for this job, and there was a promise that she would attain permanent residency from this job.
Right. So it's just stunning that this happens in this day and age. So here's a student, they borrow the money or they use their savings, right? So $12,000. What they think they're buying is a legitimate job, is costs, and that will buy, you know, by paying a fee, they get the job, and that would help them to get their permanent visa, right?
Yeah, that was what was promised. Residence.
That's promised. Yeah. So that's how they operate.
Yeah.
All right, so she pays, what happens next?
So she pays $12,000. She signs a contract, a questionable contract.
And who is this to? So $12,000.
This is to Kelvin Zhang. But it's paid through an intermediary.
Right. Yeah. That's my point, right? Yeah. So what some of these unscrupulous employers are using is they use intermediary, so money is paid to third parties.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So she pays the $12,000.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
And then she begins working at Extreme PC in St. Luke's.
So that's, okay, that's St. Luke's, just down the road.
That's
right. I'll have to go and visit it and see what they're up to. But there's a bit of a step before that, isn't it? Because what she is getting, she gets the job, and does she get a contract?
She gets a one-page contract written entirely in Mandarin.
Right. So that's, because they don't know, right? And that's illegal, right? That's illegal in New Zealand.
It does not conform with
So already that she has, but she's a legitimate employee at that point.
Yes,
right?
There is an employment relationship.
Right. So it's important that other people or students who have put in this thing, that the fault is not theirs. Once they sign or given an agreement, that will stand up in court.
It will.
Right. So even though it isn't done right, and that. So she's then an employee.
The nature of the relationship.
So, right, exactly. Mm. Right. So I should point out that, you know, you're one of those very clever law lawyers who have done law school, so you know what you're talking about. So she's now an employee.
Yes.
But what was disturbing, what happened next?
So she worked for 20 hours a week for about 3 months, and during these 3 months she wasn't paid at all.
Right.
And then she returns to China at the end of these 3 months, and with the expectation that this job will continue for another 3 months.
For at least another 3 months.
Yes, and that was in the contract as well.
Okay, so in the contract. So she went back to China for personal reasons?
Yes.
To visit a family,
family for Chinese New Year.
So that's fine. And then, of course, she can't get back into the country unless the employer provides Immigration New Zealand a letter.
Yeah. That's right.
That's right.
And so they have not provided that.
They have
her.
Not provided
and
any letter.
They just ghosted her.
Yes.
Right? So she's trapped back in China.
She's still in China today.
Right. And she's $12,000 short, and she worked for 3 months for free.
$12,000 plus the salary that right. she was owed.
Owed. So if it's a minimum wage
yeah.
for 20 hours, just say.
It's about $3,500.
That's about $3,500 through that period. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's what she's owed. What's interesting, you've briefed me before I came on, so tell me about what the employer's been telling her since.
So the employer offered to repay the salary that she was owed.
Right.
But when Lucy requested that everything she was owed be returned, the employer cut off contact again.
Right. So what it is, and so from a legal point of view, that she has been offered, he has offered, once she's raised her grievance, I haven't yeah. been paid, he's offered to pay her all the money that she was owed for the period she was working for him.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a pretty slam
dunk. That's an acknowledgement.
Court, right? Acknowledgement that she was an employee.
Exactly.
Right? Now, as you know, and then on top of that, the $12,000, explain to me how that is illegal, and any worker who's paid what they call a job premium are entitled to get it back regardless.
Yeah, so it's a premium. So when you pay for a job, that's a premium, and premiums are illegal. There's no ambiguity about that.
Does the worker get into trouble, or is it an employer?
No, it's the employer's responsibility.
So this is important for people who are listening.
Yeah.
If they are in this, if they have been a victim of this behaviour, or if they know people have, that anyone who's
definitely.
Paid a premium, if they've got some evidence they've done it, they're entitled to have that returned to them.
Exactly.
And so if anyone who does, right, so I'm doing a bit of a push here,
yeah.
right, because if anyone who does, they can go to our website
yeah.
on utu.org.nz, utu.org.nz, and there is a section there that you can write to us, right, and just ask us, you know, and we'll help you if we can. Right, and so or you can phone us on our 0800 number. It's a toll free, and that's 0800 368 000. So we want to help people in this situation. So number one, get your premiums back. We want to help with that.
Yeah,
and of course, any unpaid work that people own is they've got to have that paid back too in law. Correct?
Exactly.
No matter. See, what workers are told, or people, victims are told, that you have done something illegal, but they haven't.
No.
Right? There's also the question of the power relationship, isn't there?
Yeah, you know? It's an unequal
right.
power relationship.
So therefore, if you want to eat, or you want to work, or you want to build a better life in this country, and you know, and many do, and I'm pleased about that, but that you can't be punished.
And that's in the purpose of the Employment Relations Act as well.
Yeah, I knew you were bright. Yeah, that's exactly right. So that people now, so I'm very thinking about people who need help, right? Mm. Prenums, doesn't matter if you agree to pay it, because you'll do, because you want the job, right? So we
yeah.
know that. But that's about power,
yeah.
you know? So you pay it, you haven't breached any rules, and any time you work for free that you're entitled to be paid, if you worked and haven't had a contract, that still does not absolve the employer.
No.
Does it?
And that's a violation of their own obligations.
Right. But the worker doesn't get into trouble for that.
No.
No. So that's important to know too.
Yeah.
So what you're doing helping with Lucy.
Yes.
And you're helping her, and we'll get her money back, or I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
What I wanted you to come and talk to us about, because you have a sense this is actually a widespread practice.
That's right.
And you're pretty sure about that.
Pretty
right?
confident about that.
You've seen the WeChats. And
I've seen the messages between Lucy and her boss, and we know that she wasn't the only one working
right.
at Extreme PC.
Right.
We also know that Kelvin had been advertising the sale of permanent residencies for $20,000.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's interesting, because when you look them up on the sites, the companies he's saying he's director of, that some of them, tell us about that.
So he's director of Extreme PC and also New Zealand Career Institute, but New Zealand Career Institute doesn't have a website.
It's just a front, isn't it? I mean, well, you're not allowed to say it, but it's just a front, right? This is a scam, you know?
There's reason to be suspicious.
You're going to write, because you're a law lawyer, so you've got to be careful as what you say. I don't. I tell the truth. But what he also, he's got him down, he's offered jobs of companies that you've got no evidence they actually exist. No,
yeah. So there were three other companies that were offered to Lucy.
Right, and there has been some questions. Some companies are actually registered offshore.
Yes.
Right, but you haven't got to the bottom of that yet. No. But we've got enough to know. These jobs, they don't exist, and these workers have been asked to work for free. Yeah.
And also, Extreme PC, where Lucy was working, wasn't registered as a company while Lucy was there.
Right. So that's so thing. Well, I think the first thing we always do as our policy is to help the workers to get their money back and get some justice. Right.
For sure.
And once we got that, what Lucy wants, obviously, come back to sort of to New Zealand. Mm-hmm. We have Anu in our office. He's the president also of the Migrant Workers Association, mm-hmm. just doing some work in the immigration. So we might be able to help with that to get her back into the country as well. So people just need to be aware of that in our office. Yeah. About what we can do if we can. But that's a kind of a separate issue from this dispute. Is there anything else you want to...
No, that's
tell
it.
Us about those pretty wise days. So what we're really saying is anyone who knows anything about... What's his name? Kelvin?
Kelvin Zhang.
Zhang. How do you pronounce that?
Z-H-A-N-G.
Right. So we're going to put all his details on the website at utu.org.nz. We ask people who this moves them to do something about it to check the site out and check it out and let us know if you know, because we suspect this is a widespread of operations with many young workers and students being exploited, and we need to put an end to it.
Yeah.
Okay, and get them some justice.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for coming in. But just before we go, could you just give us a little brief for our listeners as to who you are?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Arman Askarani. I'm a worker advocate with the advocacy team at One Union Trust. Basically, we look at all cases of workplace abuse or exploitation, and we don't turn anyone away. So that's our mission.
You're a saint.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Armin. Wonderful to have you on our first show to round things off with quite a nuanced case, but also a blatant example of the vulnerable positions migrants find themselves in and the advantage that gets taken of them. Very excited, actually, because in the coming weeks, Aman and I will be hosting a segment on this show about basic employment rights, basic worker rights. Might pay for some of these bosses to tune in, learn what the basic legality of having employees is. But so we're nearing the end of our show today. Cheers if you've tuned in for this long. It's our first go at it. So, the editing, it's not perfect yet, but we'll get there. And the most important thing is that these workers have finally able to be heard. And that's exactly what Utu for Workers Union strives for and what Utu for Workers Hour is all about. It's a platform for the exploited peoples of Aotearoa to be heard. So we will also, in the coming weeks, be bringing to you a variety of segments, including chats between myself and notable journalist Chris Trotter about New Zealand history, interviews with the ever-articulate Anu Kaloti, president of the Migrant Workers Association and a close associate with the union. As already mentioned, we're doing a segment on employment rights, but a segment I'm particularly keen on is something we've titled Songs of Struggle. Well, I will be playing songs from the workers' movement throughout history from all walks of life and just seeing how inspiring and, relevant the messages are to today. And just a reminder of ways you can get in contact with the Utu for Workers Union. We have our toll-free 0800 number, so that's 0800 368 000. Or you could email us at justice@utu, and that's utu.org.nz, or go to our website, utu.org.nz. Again, that's utu.org.nz. You'll find easy contact submission forms on the site. And if you have a case you would like the One Union Trust to represent you for, there is a case assessment available on our website. It's super easy to fill out and send through. The first thing you'll see on the site, however, is the articles we've written about the three accused exploiters talked about today on the show. As a reminder, these are Monty Patel of Tulsi in Wellington, James Delmont of Dollar Dealers, and Calvin Zhang of both Extreme PC St. Luke's and the New Zealand Career Institute. Big thank you to our guest speakers and advocates from the One Union Trust today. Sabrina, Bryce, Aman, the work you do is just awesome. So from myself, all the volunteers at Utu for Workers, thanks heaps for tuning in to our inaugural show and hearing these workers' stories. You know, their stories are our stories. And it looks like we have about a minute left, so I'm just going to quickly take advantage of that and give an example of the Songs of Struggle. So I'm going to play for you a little bit of the cover version of Lean On Me that was sung at the Washington, D.C. protest in 2020 as a part of the Black Lives Matter movement. Really moving stuff, and we'll be able to delve more into it next week. So here you go.